Oh man, we're finally here, right? We're in the throes of the holiday season, the Christmas season. And as that song said, man, in the air, there's a spirit of Christmas. You guys feel Christmas this morning? Feel a little holiday spirit? Yeah, all right, man. Yeah, well, you know, we're beginning the crazy time now, right? This is a time where we begin to gain weight. It's a time where we begin to, you know, have people in our houses that annoy us. It's time when, you know, we start giving gifts away. We've gone into credit card debt on. We, you know, the stress of everybody being at our house through the rest of the season. We start thinking about all the things that bothered us in 2017 that we want to do different in 2018. Yes, officially.
It's the most wonderful time of the year, with the kids jingle belling and everyone telling you be of good cheer.
It's the most wonderful time of the year, right? I mean, we put the smile on and we're like, it's awesome, and yet it's chaotic and crazy, and yet we believe that you can have the best Christmas ever. We really do. We believe that you can have peace this Christmas regardless of what's going on, and so that's what we've been talking about for the last 4 weeks, and my name's Kurt, by the way. It's great to have you here this morning. I don't usually open up that way. I just thought I'd give you a little show choir, you know, moment there, which is not a part of my history at all. I'm not sure why we did that, but we're glad you're here as we explore how to have peace, as Eric said, in our future. There's things we can do to create peace for our future. So let me pray for us before we dive into that. Heavenly Father, we thank you for this time, for bringing us here today. Some of us, we may not even know why we're here. We came at the invite of a friend, or maybe you got drugged here by a spouse or a girlfriend or boyfriend, and we come from all different backgrounds, beliefs, and yet wherever we are, God, I just pray that my words would be helpful today. God, I pray that you'd grow us. You'd help us to see something maybe we've never seen before and experience something that's unique. Help us have a unique encounter with you, I pray. And God, we just pray all these things according to your reputation and your name, Jesus. Amen. Well, you know, oftentimes the youngest generation in our world is kind of an indicator of where the rest of the country is. And one study recently done by college students actually found this. So a study of 420 Chicago area college students investigated their feelings about the Christmas holiday and found that three of the most common themes are loneliness, anxiety, and helplessness. So this says if you're a college student and you feel lonely, anxious, or helpless, then you're what we would call normal. That's what you are. You're normal. That's a very normal thing to feel, apparently, this time of year. Probably not just for college students, but in a large sense, this really represents the rest of the American population. In fact, just this past week, I saw some statistics from our school district here, Hamilton Southeastern School District, which is a part of this new initiative that we're doing, is where these statistics came out, called Guiding All Kids. It's kind of a guidance and school counseling initiative to make sure every kid, you know, from kindergarten through 12th grade, has the appropriate support and guidance through their entire, you know, experience. And so the school system earlier this year did a survey with 14,000 parents, students, and educators, and this is what they found. The primary social and emotional needs of our students, K through 12, in the HSC school district are anxiety, stress, and bullying. I mean, it almost mirrors what college students are saying. And yet, it's in the midst of this feeling of anxiety and concern and the sense of, you know, fear that we have in our world, that peace actually comes crashing in. That the Prince of Peace, Jesus himself, you know, comes crashing in, and that you and I can actually have access to that. We can actually experience that kind of peace. So for the rest of our time today, I want to talk with us about how to be peaceful for the future. How do we experience a peace in the things we're stressed about? There are certain behaviors, certain things we can do that actually pave a pathway as we go into the future. Now, the Bible has a lot to say about peace, and I know we're all at different places with the Bible. We don't believe everybody comes in here believing the same thing. Maybe you've discounted the Bible. Maybe you feel like the Bible's irrelevant. Man, if that's how you feel, we're excited you're here, just trying to figure things out. Dallas Willard actually says something really fascinating. He says this. He says, spirituality wrongly understood or pursued is a major source of human misery and rebellion against God. And maybe you read that and you're like, man, that is my experience. Well, if that's your experience, man, we are so excited you're here this morning. And today, I want us to look at one of the more profound verses in the Bible on the sense of peace. And it comes from a guy named Paul, the Apostle Paul. And this is in the New Testament portion of the Bible. And Paul is somebody who, he wrote more of the New Testament than any other figure. He planted churches all around the Mediterranean rim. He was really had a passion for people who were exploring God, trying to discover what Jesus, who Jesus is and what it means to their life. And so here's what Paul says in Ephesians chapter 4. He says, "Rejoice in the Lord always. I will say it again, rejoice." He says, "Let your reasonableness be known to everyone. The Lord is at hand. Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus." Now, again, I know as we look at this today, you know, we have varying degrees of spiritual orientations and backgrounds, and we may not all believe, you know, that the Bible's true, or maybe we just don't feel like it's relevant. And I'm not going to ask you to do this verse just because it's in the Bible, because you may not believe the Bible. But here's what I want you to consider today, all right? This verse, or these couple verses from the Apostle Paul, if you try this, these things, and I'll point them, the five things he talks about in a moment, if you try this, you might find that this actually works, all right? You might find that it makes you better at life, and it makes your life better. You might actually discover that, because this verse is very testable, all right? Now, one of the things that's fascinating about this is Paul, when he breaks this down, here's what he says. The big money, the money phrase right here is right here. He says, "The peace of God, which surpasses all understanding," right? He says, "The peace of God," and then he gives us these five things. He says, first of all, rejoice. Second of all, be reasonable. Third, do not be anxious. Fourth, pray, or, you know, supplication, it's a form of praying. And then do all this with thanksgiving. So five things right here, right? Rejoice, be reasonable, do not be anxious, pray, and do it all with thanksgiving. And what he's saying right here is these five things, when you do these, when you begin to walk these activities out in your life, there will be a peace that surpasses all understanding. People around you won't be able to figure out why you have a sense of peace, all right? Now, Chapman University every year does this survey on the top fears of that particular year. And I'm going to show this to you in just a moment. It's always fascinating. But before we do that, I want you to consider this. If you have a fear about something, you can't have a peace about something. Right? Fear and peace are actually mutually exclusive of one another. You can't have a fear about something and at the same time have a peace. All right? And so these are two attitudes, and you choose which attitude you're going to take on. And when you look at our country, the fears are massive right now. They are massive. So here's what Chapman University found, this year's 2017 top 10 fears. Number one, 74% of Americans have a fear of corruption of government officials. Off the charts, 74%, three quarters of us. American Health Care Act or Trump Care, first time I've seen the phrase Trump Care, 55%. The next two, 50%, pollution of the oceans and drinking water, 50% of us not having enough money for our future, high medical bills at 48%. You can see where this is going. You know what's fascinating about this? Is for the last 10 years, terrorism has been on the top 10 list, and it's not on there this year. You know why? Get this. Last year, it was number two at 41%. All right, terrorism was number two at 41% in 2016. It actually increased this year to 43%. But these fears so surpassed the fear of terrorism. Terrorism is now 13th on the list because we live in a culture of fear. And it just keeps rising. And yet, despite all of our fears, the indicators in the world actually tell us that the last decade has been better than the previous decade, that we're actually trending in the right direction, as Neil Strauss from Rolling Stone magazine actually shows us in this little documentary. Take a look at this.
Americans today do not feel safe.
People are scared.
People are going to die.
Our country's going to hell.
2015 was reportedly the best year in history for the average person. So why is everyone so afraid? According to the data, life expectancy is higher than ever before, violent crime is down, and the air quality has been the cleanest it's been in a decade. But for the media and politicians, your fear is worth billions. Now more than ever, we are plugged into a nonstop feed of information, receiving messages and alerts from our social networks. And because of this, our fears are easy to manipulate.
these threats and these messages about threat are also arriving through many more channels. It's like we've built a new blood supply in our culture, and that blood can deliver nutrients, but that blood, of course, can also deliver toxins.
So what do we do when people are hardwired to respond to fear above everything else?
The long-term solution really comes from people realizing that their brain is not a perfect device. Every thought you have is not necessarily correct. Your emotion system will take those thoughts and kind of run them like a boat down a stream.
In reality, we probably won't die from a terrorist attack or mass shooting. Every day there are 117 deaths from suicide, 129 deaths from overdose, 96 deaths from car accidents, and 1,300 deaths from smoking. So the message is clear. You are the biggest threat to your own safety.
Fascinating, right? You and I are actually our own threat to our safety, our fear, our growing sense of anxiety. I mean, everything in the world seems to be trending in the right direction, and yet we're riddled with fears. We live out of more anxiety, and we're not confident because of everything going on around us. And I would suggest that one of the reasons for this is that we've lost something about the presence of God, about the presence of Jesus and the peace that he brings in our lives. So three big ideas I want to explore with us today. Three big ideas. Number one is chaos. Chaos. See, you can feel that you're in the midst of chaos. Many of us probably feel that right now. And yet, at the same time, you can have a peace that surpasses understanding. You can actually have that amidst the chaos. Take a look at Matthew. Matthew, one of the authorized biographers of Jesus' life. Matthew, Mark, Luke, John. Four guys who wrote down what they saw, what they experienced, what they got from interviewing people who were there with Jesus. Here's how he captures a part of the Christmas story. He says, "All this took place to fulfill what the Lord had spoken by the prophet. Behold, the virgin shall conceive and bear a son, and they shall call his name Emmanuel, God with us." Emmanuel, God with us. When God is with us, we can endure the chaos. And there's been a lot of chaos throughout the history of the world, right? All the way back to the first recorded point of history, there's been chaos, and there's still chaos going on today. In the book, What Every Person Should Know About War, it reports this. Over the past 3,400 years, humans have been entirely at peace for 268 of them, or just 8% of recorded history. So if history is any predictor of the future, this says that 92% of the time, we're going to be in chaos, at least by the metric of war, or countries not being at peace with one another. And as we looked at last week, all the way back to the Christmas story, there was chaos. There was random violence. There was what seemed like purposeless things happening in the world where you step back and go, God, what are you thinking? Why is this happening? And it's in that chaos that the angel says, Emmanuel is coming. Good news. It's good news for all the people. Because there's a peace that's coming to rest on those who have God's favor, those who have chosen to receive the peace. And Jesus comes, and yet, when he comes with us and begins walking among us, later on in Matthew chapter 10, Jesus actually says this. He says, "Do not think that I have come to bring peace to the earth. I have not come to bring peace, but a sword." And you're like, whoa, what are you talking about, Jesus? It sounds like you're talking about out of both sides of your mouth. On one hand, you say, "I'm coming to bring a peace," and then on the other hand, you're saying, "Don't think. Don't you dare start thinking I'm coming to bring a peace. No, I'm coming to bring a sword." All right, Jesus, which one is it? Which one are you doing? Well, what he's saying, here's what he's saying right here. What he's saying is, I'm coming to coexist and bring a peace amidst the chaos. In fact, some of the things that Jesus asks us to do when we begin following him, we begin to follow the ways of Jesus, do the things Jesus wants us to do, it actually begins to create some chaos because you begin going against the flow of other things in your life. When Julie and I first got married, we decided to take seriously the leave and cleave principle. And if you're not familiar with the leave and cleave principle, it comes out of Genesis chapter 1, verse 26, where it talks about how a man shall leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, or man and woman should cleave to their spouse. It's basically the leave and cleave principle. You know, your family of origin is no longer your highest level of human commitment. You're now, you know, committing to your spouse, to the one in whom you're marrying that day. So back in 1996, when Julie and I got married, we said, that's how we're going to live. We're not going to mindlessly just continue to make our family of origin our highest level of human commitment. That's all we've known to that point in life. But when we get married, the way God designed it is we're supposed to be committed to each other, first and foremost, only under God. And so it created some chaos. My brother-in-law, I remember my brother-in-law calling me one day, and he used to be my best friend, and then he turned into my brother-in-law. Now, it's not because like, he became my brother-in-law and no longer is my best friend. He just married my sister-in-law, and so now he's part of the family, and then he moved away, and I didn't see him very much. And so anyway, he called me one day, and he said, "Hey, Kurt, just want to give you a heads up. Had a conversation with our in-laws, and they're really concerned about Julie. They're worried that you are controlling her and that you're not letting her make decisions for herself." And I said, "Well, that's interesting." He said, "Well, yeah, that's what I told him." I said, "I've known Kurt a long time. It didn't sound like Kurt." And I said, "Well, did they give you like any indicators as to why they feel that way?" And they said, "Oh, yeah, a whole bunch of them." I'm like, "Great." You know, and so he said, basically, they're like, you know, every time we say to her, "Hey, we're going to do this family thing on this weekend. We want you to come into town," or "We've planned to go to the Smoky Mountains as a family. We're in a cabin. We want everybody to be there." Every time we ask her, you know, "Hey," or tell her, "Here's what we're doing," she's like, "Well, I first need to talk to Kurt, and then I'll get back to you." Oh, that's what we're talking about. Well, that's called the leave and cleave principle is what that is, that we're no longer committed first and foremost to our families of origin. Doesn't mean we don't want to spend time with them. This created chaos. They wanted still to be first. It's same on my side of the family. Some of the biggest tensions I've had on my side of the family have been out of wanting to be chosen first instead of cleaving to my spouse. See, when you follow the ways of Jesus, it doesn't always make the chaos go away. It actually creates it. So Jesus didn't come to make everything nice. Jesus didn't come so everybody get along. I mean, he likes it if everybody gets along, but he came to bring a path. He says, when you're in chaos, the second thing I come to bring is a path. Jesus says, "I am the way, I am the truth, I am the life." See, he says, when you take my path, you're going to get two things. Number one, you're going to get a peace that surpasses understanding that you can't fully figure out. And then secondly, you're going to find that around you, there are still swirls of chaos going on. You probably heard that old phrase, you know, if you aren't making waves, you're not kicking hard enough, right? Well, when you begin to follow the ways, do the things that Jesus asked you to do, you're going to make some waves. And not everybody's going to like the waves. Right? Sometimes people get bothered and disturbed when the waves that you're kicking, when you're making those, they just keep coming. They don't like those ways. In fact, Benjamin Covey, in his blog, "I Didn't Come to Bring Peace But a Sword," he kind of extrapolates a bit out what Jesus meant by this phrase. He says, "And that means, should you accept the mission to love the world, it will screw up your relationships. In fact, Jesus claims it will put tension on the relationships most close to you, your parents, in-laws, children. Loving God and loving others can potentially put you at odds with anyone who isn't ready to love quite as radically as you are." See, Jesus doesn't call us to be judgmental of people who have different beliefs. He doesn't call us to look down on people who make different life decisions than we make. See, most religious people think that's their role. Be grumble, all these people make bad decisions. That's what they think their role is. No. Jesus says, I want you to love like I love. That's what Jesus says. And I want you to make choices based on love that only someone who has the peace that passes understanding can make. And he says, when you do this, it's actually going to just continue to be a cyclical thing. You're going to experience more of that peace in your life. See, how does this peace come to us? How do we get this peace? Well, see, here's the thing. You've got a choice to make. Peace is a choice. Right? You have to choose to follow the path of what Jesus invites us into, right? Of practicing the purposeful presence of God. There are things we can do that we can engage in, activities we can build into our life that actually create more and more peace for us. You know, as I look back at the history of my life and some of the big seasons of tension in my life, you know, most chaotic times, many of them came around the holidays, ironically. Probably the same for you. Some of them didn't. I'll share a few of them with you this morning. For me, one of my biggest physical challenges in my life I've ever experienced, now this, you know, kind of pales in comparison compared to what some of you have been through, but for me, the biggest physical thing I've ever battled was my junior year of college when I was about 20. And it was just early December, maybe the first week of December. I just remember it was icy outside. I was playing volleyball in an intramural volleyball league. I'd had a history of shoulder problems, dislocations, a couple surgeries to repair the anterior ligament. But I was like, I'm not going to let fear of, you know, another dislocation keep me from doing things I love. So I kept playing sports. And I went to spike a volleyball in a 10-10-30 game late at night one night when we were playing. And as soon as I made impact, the head of the shoulder came right out the front, you know, and dislocated. And every time that happened, I had to go to the hospital. It took a while to put it back in. And, you know, it's not the Mel Gibson thing, just so you know. I mean, it's not like running against a wall and, and it's back. It's not quite that easy. Well, this time, the head of the shoulder was out of socket for longer than normal. And it just happened that it was putting pressure on the nerves that ran into my arm, and it killed the nerves, or at least they weren't sure if it killed them or severed them. Nonetheless, for 1 year, I was paralyzed in my right arm. We called it the limp fish. I walked around like this. You know, my hand was limp. I couldn't move it. Atrophy set in. At this contraption that looked like Edward Scissors' hands. You know, it had rubber bands that pulled my hands up because I couldn't pull them. It was crazy. And that put me in a bad place. God, how could this happen? Why'd this happen to me? I'm heading into finals season. I mean, the anxiety, the frustration, even anger at God at times. And I had the choice to make whether I was going to stay in that or whether I was going to kind of lean into some of the things I'd been memorizing in my, you know, it's funny how we learn things in small groups, but we don't let them translate into our life. I mean, one of the verses that had become really powerful was Psalm 37, where it talks about how the Lord makes firm the steps of those whom delight in him. And even though you may fall, even though you may stumble, the Lord upholds you in his hand. And I had to decide if I was going to lean into that, as I kind of had some stumbling moments right there and experience a peace. Back in 2001, this one wasn't at Christmas season, but it was actually the fall of 2001, first week of September. I never forget it. Julie and I, we discovered that we were expecting our first child. And we're so excited. We've been married a little over 6 years. You know, we'd just been enjoying building in the marriage, and so it was time to start having kids. And you know, discovered that was going to eventually become Macy. We didn't know if we were having a boy or a girl, but 3 or 4 days after we found out we were expecting, 9/11 hit. And I just remember watching those airplanes on the news fly into buildings thinking, what in the world are we doing bringing a kid into this? You know, 100 people lined up at the gas stations. I just remember thinking, man, are we even going to have a world for them to grow up in? What kind of world is this going to be? And I remember in that season, you know, I had a choice. Are we going to live in the fear, live in the anxiety, live in everything that's going on around us, or are we going to lean into 1 Timothy, which talks about how God hasn't given us a spirit of fear, but one of power and of love and of a sound mind? What a choice to make. If you've been around Crosspoint for any time at all, you know we're in our third capital campaign here at Crosspoint. And this is one of many ongoing, because as we continue to, you know, accomplish our mission and take Christ to new places, we're going to continue to have to fund that. And every time we do these capital campaigns, there's chaos. Every time. Every time we do one, there's something that doesn't go the way we planned, something that kind of falls apart, and usually has nothing to do with the money coming in. You guys are generous. Holy cow, Crosspoint's a generous community. Way to go on your generosity, man. You guys do awesome on generosity, whether it's meal boxes, Game Change, any of these things. Well, back in, it was right after Thanksgiving 2012, the launch campaign was intended to raise the cash needed to go with our lending package so we could build this building. And we were so close, in about $100,000, $150,000 of what we needed. So we decided to go back to our lenders and say, hey, could any chance we could get a bump up on our lending package? We met with them, a couple of our finance guys, a couple of their finance guys, sat out at the table, and they said, you know, we're glad you came in. We're like, well, good, you know, we're glad you meet with us and consider this today. And they said, yeah, before we get to that, we just want to share with you, we're a little concerned based on, you know, just what we've committed to you and where the economy is and so on and so forth with the package we gave you. And they're like, we're not going to, you know, pull back on it, but we are going to recalibrate it, was, I think, the word they used. And I'm like, well, recalibrate, what does that mean? Well, in essence, what it meant is they said they were pulling back $500,000 out of the package that we had to put as investment dollars, dollar for dollar on account with them as a collateral in order to get the loan. I'm like, well, that's, why would we do that? I mean, if we had that cash, we'd just use it, right? And so, I mean, I just saw red in that moment, if I can be really honest. Next thing I remember hearing, we're sitting at a table, and one of the guys goes, well, Kurt, you know, I'm sure you kind of can, you know, I can understand if you feel like we've kind of, you know, pulled the carpet out from under you a bit. I'm like, oh, no, I don't feel that way at all. They're like, oh, good. I'm like, you ever had that? These were men. These were all men, by the way, in the room. So you ever had that, like, sick to your gut feeling, like, you know, when you were kicked in the crotch? Yeah. So that's how I feel right now. You know when you feel like you're about ready to vomit all over the place? And they're all like, whoa, they're scooting back away from the table. That's how I feel. I mean, that put me in a bad place. I mean, here we are ready to build this place. We've been telling people we're about ready to go, and something totally unexpected happens. And I was in a bad place for a while. a couple weeks. I mean, and the bummer of it was I had to drive by the office of that lending institution every day to get to my office. So every day I got to drive by and be reminded that they, you know, pulled the carpet out, kicked you in the crotch, whatever you want to call it. And every day I'd pull my phone out and I'd just start writing an email because they were like, oh, we risk with, you know, churches. We're so excited to risk going out on a limb with you. I'm like, don't you ever talk about going out on a limb with a startup pastor. You know, in my job, risk is like 80% chance my marriage is going to fail when we start a church. That's what we knew going in. Risk is 75% chance we're not going to be existing in 3 years. Most churches fail in the first 3 years. We know that. Don't talk to me about effing risk. I'm dropping F-bombs, and it was not one of my prouder moments. I'm being really honest. I was in a bad place. I mean, I'm lacing it with all kinds of stuff, and every day for like 2 weeks straight, every time I'd see drop an email, I'd write it. The saving grace was I never sent it. I wouldn't be standing here probably if I sent it. All right, and so, but my relationships were suffering. I mean, my kids were feeling the anxiety, the stress, and I had to decide if I was going to continue to let the circumstances that I couldn't control impact my life and how I approached every day, or if I was going to choose to see all the good that was happening. And how the generosity of Crosspoint, even amidst this thing not going as planned, how people continue to give and how their hearts were changing because of their generosity. See, we can choose the world's version of peace, which is I want everything to go exactly the way I want it to go. Everything needs to be nice and comfy and stable. Or we can choose the peace that Jesus talks about, that the prophets talk about, which is this shalom. This idea of flourishing, of wide-eyed awareness of yeah, there's some things not going the way that they should, but look at everything that is. One of my friends, he walked down the Atlanta airport and saw this sign and texted it the other day. Shalom, y'all. Isn't that awesome? Some of us need to remember that every day this week. Shalom, y'all, right? We just need shalom. We need to know that regardless of what's going on, God is, when I lean into the way things are supposed to be, the world's not the way it's supposed to be, but Jesus, His peace begins to make things the way they're supposed to be. And even when bad stuff's happening, I can elevate, the water can raise the boats all around us. See, when you get to that place, you get the peace that passes understanding. So you can choose a different path. And when you do that, third thing, last thing, you get a confidence. Actually get a confidence. You know that no matter what comes your way, man, there's a confidence that you have. You know, you know that when you choose to do something that might be a bit chaotic, you know, even if it's risky, there's a confidence because your identity is not attached to that thing. You know, you can take risks because you're not afraid of failing, because if you fail, your identity isn't fail. Your identity is actually rooted in God. It's rooted in His identity. And there's a confidence that we receive. See, Jesus himself says this in John 10. He says, my sheep hear my voice, and I know them, and they follow me. I give them eternal life, and they will never perish, and no one will snatch them out of my hand. Read that again. He says, no one will snatch them out of my hand. He says, I give a peace that the world doesn't understand. In fact, in a study of the American Journal of Epidemiology, here's what they said. They said, researchers looked at four areas: volunteering or working with a charity, taking educational courses, participating in religious organizations, and participating in a political or community organization. Of the four, participating in a religious organization was the only social activity associated with sustained happiness, so researchers found. Well, what do they mean here by religious activity? What is it that you can do that actually creates that happiness? Well, I don't think it's just coming and sitting in a religious environment like this on a Sunday or on a Thursday. I think that's part of it. I think that's an important part of it. But I think what they mean is there's certain behaviors, there's certain activities that we can build into our lives. And when we kind of begin to completely build them in, we begin to get a happiness, a joy, a peace that comes out of our lives. And you might go, well, what kind of religious things are those? Well, I don't know. Let's take a look at what Paul said. Remember what Paul said here back in Philippians chapter 4? He said, number one, rejoice. He gives us a path, five things to peace in our future. Number one, rejoicing. What does that mean? It's a religious exercise. It's choosing to say, I'm going to choose to see the good going on around me and rejoice about it instead of all the chaos. I have to be aware of the chaos, but I'm going to choose to see that, oh my word, there's still good things happening around me. I'm going to rejoice about those things. Here's another one, reasonableness. What's reasonableness? Well, reasonableness is an attitude. It's a behavior. It's saying, I'm going to be reasonable. When I face certain fears, I'm going to choose to take a reasonable attitude on this. A couple weeks ago, I was hanging Christmas lights on my roof, you know, all around my house. And I was doing this in the middle of the day. Everybody was at work, school was my day off. My neighbors were all gone. I'm standing up there about 35 feet above the ground, you know, with my feet dangling over the side, hanging them down the eave. And all of a sudden, I just had this crazy thought, man, I could fall to my death right here if I bend over too far. And all of a sudden, I began to think about that for a moment. Nobody would even know. Like, if Kurt falls in the woods, does it really happen if they didn't hear him, right? It's like I could be right there for hours before anybody comes home. I finished the job, went inside. I don't know, a few days later, I saw an article about the dangers of hanging holiday decorations. I'm like, you know, they talk about 200 people a day get injured hanging holiday decorations. 15,000 people a year between Thanksgiving and New Year's. And I'm like, holy cow. And then, you know, somebody said, you know, well, man, did you hang those? I'm like, yep, with my own two hands. You know, and then they're like, well, gosh, that's kind of high. I'm like, it is. And so then when one of my strands I noticed was different than the rest, I'm like, I need to replace those. But then I started playing through my mind. What if I fall? I wonder if this was a sign. I wonder if that article's telling me I'm going to die the next time I get up there. I mean, it's like all of a sudden it's all right there, right? And then all of a sudden I'm like, wait a second. So I Googled things that you can get hurt at and die. That's a fun Google if you ever want some fun. Did you realize that 5.9 million car accidents happen every single year? That's 16,000, approximately 16,000 accidents a day, which means that my chance of getting in a car accident is 80 times higher than hanging Christmas lights. And yet I don't like resist driving, right? Julie come in and go, hey, Kurt, can you go pick up the girls, you know, at so-and-so's house? Well, honey, you know, the risks are pretty high. If I drive tonight, 80% higher chance I'm going to die than stand up on my roof hanging lights. I think I'll let them stay there, you know, for the season. They can just stay. That's unreasonable, right? So I got up on the roof and changed the Christmas lights. I mean, you know, we got to use reasonableness. I mean, my son and I, at any time, we're doing stupid, risky things, activities, riding things, driving things, that at any time we could die, right? But if I think about that, it takes my peace away. It removes my joy. I've got to look at it reasonably. Third thing, it says right here, do not be anxious. What does that mean? What it means is, you know, go ahead and plan for retirement, all right? Go ahead and make plans. Plan for your spouse to take care of them. Plan to take care of your kids. Just don't freak out about it. It means, you know, don't freak out about the fact, oh, my word, I wonder if, you know, my wife's having an affair on me, or, oh, my word, I wonder if I got cancer. Everybody around me has cancer. You know, no, it means, I mean, I tell you what, in my job, I probably hear more than the average person about bad things happening in people's lives. I mean, just by the nature of what we do. I mean, it'd be easy. When we hear somebody has, you know, cancer, they've got a tumor in their brain or at the stem of their, you know, neck, and all of a sudden I'm like, oh gosh, I woke up with a stick nap this morning. I wonder if I've got, oh my word, I think I might have a tumor, you know. And no, Paul says, no. Don't be anxious. Don't be anxious about things that aren't there, is what he's saying. I mean, go ahead, take your Prozac. I mean, go ahead and do that. But don't be anxious. All right, don't be anxious. Next thing, number four. Says, you want peace in the future, pray. He says, pray. Prayer is a supplication. Prayer is a supplication, or you simply go to God and ask him for what you want and need. Now, you may not get it all, but God welcomes you coming and asking. He says he will give you what you need, and sometimes we get the wants. See, we actually have the ability to go to God, and he invites us to do this, and some of the things will change, or we'll experience things that God working otherwise would not come about. And as a result, we'll experience more shalom and more peace. And while all this is happening, we're thankful. He says, with thanksgiving. Now, Thanksgiving isn't just like a one-day event, right? It's not like Thanksgiving Day. I mean, this is, you know, if you just focus on being thankful one day a year, you're setting yourself up for 364 days of, like, fearfulness and like, being depressed all the time. He says, no. He says, make this a pattern each and every day of your life. Like, take a look at what Brennan Manning says about thankfulness. He says, the person with the abiding spirit of gratitude is the one who trusts God. The foremost attitude of a trusting disciple is gratitude. Gratitude arises from the lived perception, evaluation, and acceptance of all of life as grace, as an undeserved and unearned gift. Where does it come from? From the Father's hand. Remember, he said, "You will not be taken out of my hand." See, this is a step that we can choose. And we got to be in a posture of thanksgiving every day. It's got to be an everyday thing all year round. And when we do this, you're going to find that there's a peace that passes understanding. So the rest of 2017, man, it can be awesome. It really can. 2018, as we head into the new year, can be awesome. But you've got to choose, even amidst the chaos that I'm experiencing, am I going to lean into the peace that Jesus brings and that nothing can take me out of his hand? A few things I want us to consider as we wrap up this morning. Take out your connection card. Some of these are on the back of your card. I just want to give you some walkouts, ways that we can begin to walk this out. Five things Paul gave us. And these are things that if you walk this out, I guarantee you're going to experience more peace. All right, first of all, weekly attendance at Crosspoint. All right, weekly attendance here, you know, or your church, wherever your church is, if you're visiting with us this morning. Listen, this is about not making church attendance like low on the priority. As long as nothing else is going on, then I'll go to church. No, make it a priority. I guarantee it'll begin to infuse your life with more peace. This is why we started Thursdays. You know, because we realize there's so many people that can't go to church on weekends that we need some option for them to go to church. It's not that they're not interested in God. It's just that there's five or six things that get in the way. Well, if that's you and you can't be here Sunday, make Thursday a priority. I love Thursday nights. You know what Thursday's been doing for me? It's like a great going into the weekend moment where you get like an infusion of hope before you go into the weekend. And I get it on the weekend as well. All right, so make it a priority. Maybe you're going to mark that of just saying, hey, I'm going to be here next week. I'm going to be in church every weekend through the end of the year and as we start 2018. Maybe it's saying I'm going to get in a small group of people whom I meet with regularly. All right, we got life groups starting after the first of the year. They took a break during the month of December. Eric mentioned, you know, community groups that are coming. We got man camp coming. Oh, my word. Men, you need to go to man camp. It's happening mid-January, so it's time to sign up for a one night, get away for a little over 24 hours, connect with some men. All right, there's all kinds of opportunities to connect. You need a community where this is a behavior, where you connect regularly with people so that when the wheels of life start falling off, heaven forbid, but it will happen, when the wheels start falling off, you have a group of people around you and a group of people to celebrate with. How about the practice or the behavior of pre-deciding to be generous and how generous you're going to be? Instead of waiting until the end of the year or the end of the month, you know, to see how it's been and do I have enough? That's very fear-based. Like, I'm not going to have enough. But instead, I'm going to follow a God of abundance who gives me his peace that passes understanding, who continues to bring grace into my life. And I'm gonna pre-decide, just like I pre-decide with my mortgage and pre-decide with my car insurance, to set a portion aside. I'm going to pre-decide because I believe in God's giving ability, and so I want to give a portion back to him. All right, so that's actually a practice that produces peace. I'm going to find a team here at Crosspoint to serve with. All right, you're going to work without being paid. Get on a serving team. You know, we got Christmas Eve coming up, all kinds of opportunities. Giving meal boxes away, taking a meal box home today. We need all those boxes out the doors today. All right, there's a way you can serve. You can figure out what your prayer plan is or what your one-on-one connecting with God plan is. You got to create behaviors that actually lead to a peace that passes understanding. Because when you do these things, these begin to infiltrate your life. Now, next week we're going to wrap this series up. I'm really excited about next week. Next weekend is our last regular weekend here at Crosspoint. We do a Thursday and two morning services. The following weekend is Christmas Eve services. It'll be a whole different routine. No morning services, but just evenings. Next week, we're going to talk about peace in our relationships. And one of the reasons I'm so excited about this is we want to equip you next week. Because you're in the next 2.5 weeks, you're going to be heading into an intense time with some of the most important people in your lives. You're going to be heading into times where you're going to be seeing people you haven't seen for a long time, family members, friends, who maybe you have stresses and tension with. And we believe that there's a pathway to finding peace even in those tense relationships. And so we're going to dive into that next weekend because we believe peace can happen over this holiday season. So make sure you're here either Thursday or Sunday this weekend. Hey, let me pray for us. Heavenly Father, we thank you for this time. We thank you for being patient with us. God, in the midst of all our preoccupations, in the midst of all of our fears and anxieties, you even understand that we make mistakes. We make mistakes, and yet you are right there with us, Emmanuel, God with us. And so, God, I just pray that the words we've heard this morning would take up residence in our minds and our hearts. The things that you've put on our heart, God, would take deep root. in our hearts, God, that they would begin to grow and flourish and create a peace that passes understanding. Help us to know what to do with what we've heard, what behaviors, what things we need to build in to have a more peaceful future. And God, I know for some of us, or maybe some of us here who just need your peace in our life, we've never received that, and we know it can happen right now by just saying, yes, Jesus, I want to know your peace. I want to know your grace. I want it to come in. I don't fully understand it. It doesn't make sense to me, but I want your grace. Would you just bring that into my life and receive me right now as I receive you? And live with the confidence of knowing that that begins to take root right now. You may not know everything. You may not know exactly where that's going to take you, but that peace begins to take root. And God with us is inside of you. So God, thank you for being available to all of us. And God, as we sing these last couple songs out of here today, God, I just pray that peace would take root in us. This song we're going to sing comes out of a deep, deep tragedy of a man who lost four of his daughters at sea in an ocean liner accident. And in the midst of his pain, the midst of his grief, the midst of not knowing how he's going to face the future, he began to say, God, when I cling on to the peace that passes understanding, it's only then that I can say it is well. It is well. So God, may that reside in us right now.